All right, so let's take a moment to let our minds come to rest. Whatever it took for us to get here today to do this together, this study, contemplation, meditation together, we're just going to let it all fall to the bottom like silt in a quiet pond. And that includes extending our awareness to encompass our body, like the physical sensation of being in this present moment. All senses open. And now we will turn our attention, we will focus our awareness without losing sight of all the other senses, like awareness is still open, but however much attention it takes for us to chant the prayers together, being mindful of their meaning, we will focus that much attention on the prayers. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru for continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms according to the different propensities of beings. Please turn the wheel of Dharma, great, lesser, and uncommon. And now my teacher prayer, starting appropriately with the four dharmas of Gampopa, one of his most famous teachings and most concise. Dadan sentient tam che lo che su drawer zinji lab to soul, chulam to drawer zinji lab to soul, am trupa sour zinji lab to soul, trupa yeshe su charwar zinji lab to soul. I pray for blessing, may my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing, may the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing, may the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing, may confusion arise as wisdom. And from the aspiration to excellent conduct. Lai ke dang, lai ke dang lu dang nu jin ke, chulbum da da mi ke nam dang. Drawa kunji dra ke jit sampar, tam che ke du da ke che ten to. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas, gods, those of humans and of demons too. In the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. And now the reminder for arousing bodhicitta. Let us begin by giving rise to the thought, and let's really do this, that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. I have to take a moment. Everybody can just rest your mind for a moment. While I do that, to send a message. Okay. So with our minds already somewhat at rest, we will contemplate the four reminders. First, the precious human existence. And these teachings were brought to the Kagyu tradition by Gampopa. We learn in his biography. We have Gampopa to thank for the four thoughts, which come originally from the Kadampa tradition founded by Atisha. So these have a very long history of being contemplated by practitioners in our tradition. So the precious human existence, just taking a moment to appreciate everything that had to fall into place in this lifetime and previous lifetimes for us to be here now, studying, meditating, and contemplating together. For us to have a chance to wake ourselves up in this lifetime. Second, remembering impermanence and death, that this opportunity will end possibly without warning. So we need to make use of every moment. Third, the law of karma, cause and result, that it's our own actions that determine what happens to us in the future of this lifetime and in future lifetimes. Negative actions will bring suffering. Positive actions will bring happiness, and Dharma practice will bring liberation. And fourth, the suffering of samsara. Since there is no reliable happiness anywhere in samsara, confused existence, we need to use this life to free ourselves and others from it, not just work to improve our samsaric situation, but actually to liberate ourselves from it so that we can actually carry out the aspiration and resolution that we said in the arousing bodhicitta. Sorry, I'm going to put myself on mute for a moment. Just every. So now we will request the Lama's blessing, a very short guru yoga, which is said to greatly strengthen our practice and make liberation in this lifetime or soon possible. So we simply visualize the Lama, our root Lama, whoever we feel closest to, or the Buddha or a deity that we feel close to. On the crown, above the crown of our head, on a lotus and moon seat, in a body of light, radiating light, love, compassion, kindness, bodhicitta. Just taking a moment to be aware of that and really feel the compassion, the wisdom, the awakened state. Requesting the blessing of the Lama or the Buddha or the deity to help us attain the same state of awakening. Knowing that just by asking, we've received the blessing, and then allowing the visualization to descend into our heart center, where it remains, whether we're aware of it or not. Now we'll do the steps for cultivating ultimate bodhicitta from the two wings of awakening, the seven points of mind training. So first, within our state of resting the mind, we begin to look at everything we're experiencing externally and especially internally as a dream. The same way we can wake up from a dream, we can wake up from our opinions, judgments, thoughts, perceptions, and so forth. From the feeling, the perception that everything around us is solid, that everything is either threatening or friendly, and so forth. Just letting, especially our internal phenomena, recede a bit from the solidity we usually perceive it in. And now in step two, we examine the nature of awareness, which is unborn. We turn our attention to look directly at the mind itself, which is perceiving all phenomena as like a dream. And we can just rest in looking at the mind in a state of non-duality with the mind if we're there. And if needed, we can give ourselves a prompt to help, such as asking, does the mind have shape? Does it have color? Where is it located? Does the mind come from somewhere? Does it go somewhere? Just asking the question with or without words, and then just resting in wherever it leaves us. And the third step, let even the remedy release naturally, the remedy being the insight that we have arrived at from looking at the mind. We let go of any trace of conceptuality insofar as we're able. And we do that again and again as needed. We may need to bring the remedy back as we're resting, but the first step to really resting is to let go of the remedy and rest in the essence, the basis of everything. Wherever that leaves you, whether you feel you recognize it or not, you can be confident that that is the nature of mind, your Buddha nature, the way things really are. Today, we're going to begin our cultivation of relative bodhicitta, Tonglen, with a meditation from Pema Chidren and Tim Olmsted. This was the final meditation instruction of their retreat in May. So first, we're resting in a state of open awareness. That's the first instruction, and we're already there. Resting in a state of open awareness, or perhaps getting closer to that demarcation where open awareness becomes resting in the nature of mind, when we lose that sense of conceptuality, that sense of separation. So within this awareness, bring to mind your realm, like the realm that you're most, perhaps most, that you find yourself in the most, and just a reminder that according to Pema Chodron, based on teachings from Trungpa Rinpoche, the hell realm is finding ourselves stuck, really caught in anger, like with no distance from it. We're in the river. We don't have to go to the river now. You don't have to be in the river, but just bringing to mind what river you usually find yourself in. Is it a river of anger and thinking that everything is against you? Is it the hungry ghost realm, a realm of never having enough, or thinking that you yourself are never enough? Is it the animal realm with the blinders on, just wanting to get by, the hamster wheel, just wanting to enjoy your routine and not have it interrupted? wanting things done the way you want them done. Could be the jealous God's realm, always looking to see where you stand in relation to other people, always trying to get ahead and be number one. Or possibly the God's realm, where everything is perfect. I have a feeling that that's not the realm we'll be bringing to mind, but maybe it is. So bring to mind your realm, which Tim calls the way that you freeze reality. Instead of being in the flow of reality, you're caught in seeing reality through a particular lens. The realm that feels familiar to you. And bring to mind the years that you've been in that same prison. Again, we're not immersing ourselves in the realm. We're just being aware of what our tendency is, what our propensity is. Though feelings may come with that. So bring to mind how the realm feels, the landscape, how it looks, the senses, how it affects your perception. And do taking and sending. Let's do taking and sending for ourselves, stuck probably intermittently in this realm. Sometimes just so caught up that we can't even see that our perception is being filtered through the lens of a realm. We just think it's reality in that moment. We're caught in the storyline. So breathe in that feeling of caughtness or whatever feelings you may have about the fact that you do get caught in that sometimes, even though you may not be right now. Breathe that in with kindness, acceptance, and love. Let it dissolve along with your breath into the vast space of your Buddha nature. And breathe out, not being caught in the realm. Breathe out awareness. Breathe out peace. Breathe out equanimity. We'll do a few rounds of taking and sending for ourselves. And if you're not identifying a realm, if you're just coming up blank, just breathe that in and continue to breathe out peace, happiness, equanimity, freedom. Now bring to mind all other beings, human, animal, all other beings who have a similar style, a similar lens for viewing the world when we get caught up. Everybody else who falls into the anger trap or the neediness trap or the routine trap. Know that it drives them crazy as much as it drives us crazy. They want relief and freedom as much as we do. And we feel the same tenderness, the same compassion for them as hopefully we do for ourselves. Feel that we know them as well as we know ourselves and breathe in their confusion, their frustration, their realm, their prison. Breathing out to them freedom, happiness, peace, equanimity. If any particular beings come to mind, include them. Otherwise, just keep in mind the framework of all beings who have the same style of imprisonment. Still including ourselves. Now extending our our Tonglen to include all sentient beings, whatever realm they may fall into from time to time, whatever realm they may be trapped in, past, present, and future. Breathing all of that in, letting it dissolve into our Buddha nature. Breathing out the antidote. Breathing out freedom. Breathing out the knowledge that freedom is possible no matter how trapped any being may be in any given moment. And now Tim ends the meditation with rejoicing. He says, bring to mind how wonderful that each of us has the opportunity in this life to investigate this pattern that has been possibly plaguing us for lifetimes. Rejoicing that through our own exploration, we can benefit others, helping them find freedom as well. And he equates this Tonglen with the four immeasurables, the four limitless aspirations. Breathing in, as we know, is compassion. Breathing out is loving kindness, the wish for beings to have happiness. The rejoicing in this opportunity is sympathetic joy, the third immeasurable, and that we're doing it for all beings is equanimity. So there's an application of the four immeasurables. And now Tim's instruction is to return to open awareness, letting go again of all conceptuality, all visualization, letting thoughts come and go but not getting caught up in them, or letting them go again when we do get caught up. Aware of all our senses, including internally our thoughts and feelings. And now coming back to study mode. And welcome, Anne. We have a little technical problem there. I'm so glad that you could reach me by phone. Anybody have anything that they would like to ask or say before we start talking about the life of Gampopa?
I have one quick thing.
Yes, Mark.
Which was that you can do this kind of tongue if you have feel like you're sort of haunted, you know, by unseen beings or whatever. You can do that same thing with recognizing that they're only hanging around because they, you know, they need something from you. So you mm-hmm. can try to just give it, say like, here, take whatever you need in the same way as in Tonglen, and then say, and then you can say, see you later.
Okay. Thank you for that observation, Mark. That's good advice. Anybody else? Okay, so we are going to look then. I don't have anything else on the list. This is where we usually chant the 37 practices. So I just have this little feeling something is missing and we're not supposed to go straight to study. But we already did the 37 practices. So I hope everybody had a chance to look into the life of Gampopa, at least, you know, briefly, even with a little Google search, so that you have an idea of who he was. There's, you know, it's good to remember certain things about his life because it's very inspiring. I certainly find it very inspiring. And I'm going to be using this book, The Life of Gampopa by Jompa Mackenzie Stewart. this has been out for quite a few years now. And I just learned from Amazon when I was doing research that there seems to be a new biography of him out, which I will probably read. There's another nice, pretty short biography, substantial but short, in The 100,000 Songs of Milarepa. And I took a look at that one as well. And it seems very similar to this one. This one is the longer version. And this one, Jompa Mackenzie Stewart compiled from the many biographical materials that there are in Tibetan about Gampopa. So it's a fairly short one. It's less than 100 pages with some extra materials at the back about the Kagyu lineage. And hopefully we'll have time to talk a little bit about the lineage as well. So I will offer an opportunity at various intervals for anyone to comment or ask a question. And if you have something really pressing, then feel free to unmute yourself or raise your hand mechanically or physically to do so. So I'm going to start with a couple of observations from the preface to the book, which was written by Jompa Mackenzie Stewart. Wait a minute. Ah, yes, there's also an introduction. So actually it's the introduction by Lobsang Lalungpa that I'm going to read a couple of short things from just to introduce Gampopa. So I don't know if other people have the book. I'm not going to say page numbers unless somebody really wants me to. But if anybody wants some, page 13. So he just starts off with the basic facts. Gampopa Sonam Rinchen, his name was Sonam Rinchen, was given to him when he became a monk. Gampopa Sonam Rinchen, Gampo Dar is where he established his first monastery, his monastery. So Gampopa is just like, he's identified by the place where he lived, as often happens. Gampopa Sonam Rinchen lived from 1079 to 1153. And I like to do this too. I just did a quick survey to see what was happening in our part of the world at that time, because I think it's really interesting to think what was happening here in the Western world at the time that Gampopa was alive. So the first part of his life was in the 11th century, so that's what I looked up. It's considered to be the early High Middle Ages, having come out of the Lower Middle Ages. And you can look that up if you want more information about it. But 11th century High Middle Ages, we're just getting started in Europe. The Byzantine Empire was in decline and the Normans were beginning to dominate Europe. The Normans resonate with me. I know about the Normans. That's a part of history that really interests me. That was when William the Conqueror conquered England. The Normans were an amalgam of the Franks, which is like Germanic peoples, and the Gallo-Romans, meaning the French who had mixed with the Romans from the Roman Empire, who had overrun Europe long ago, and the Norse Vikings who had invaded. So they were a very sort of warlike people. They had all of these factors, I guess, that made them very sort of warlike, and they liked to conquer things. And so they conquered England in 1066, the Battle of Hastings. So that was going on. The First Crusade began in the 11th century, right at the end of the 11th century. The Great Schism in the church began in the middle of the 11th century. That's the break between the Western Roman Catholic Church and the Eastern Orthodox churches, and that continues to this day. They're like separate now, but they were part of the Holy Roman Empire long ago. At the very beginning of the 11th century, Leif Erikson and the Vikings established small settlements in North America, I think in Canada. So that was happening here. And of course, the peoples of North America, the indigenous peoples of North America at that time were doing whatever they did. It still like four centuries before Columbus is going to come. In Scotland, I just found this really interesting. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but Duncan the First of Scotland was slain in battle in 1040, and Macbeth succeeded him. So that's real history, that Shakespeare play, Macbeth. So that's just a capsule summary of what was happening with us when Gampopa was born. He was born in 1079. That's 7 years after the Battle of Hastings, after England was conquered by the Viking, Germanic, Gallo-Romans. So his name, back to Lobsang Lalungpa, the name Gampopa Sonam Rinchen evokes reverence among Tibetans of all backgrounds and religious affinities. Much the same way that Milarepa is greatly admired by all the lineages of Tibetan Buddhism. Gampopa was the founder of the Dogpo Kagyupa order, and that we're within that. The Dogpo encompasses a lot of different sub-lineages, like our own Karma Kamsang. But he was the founder of the umbrella, you know, Dogpo Kagyupa order, all the Kagyus. And thus he was the spiritual father of most Kagyupa branches established by his disciples. So all of Kagyu Buddhism came out of Gampopa. While Marpa, Milarepa, and Gampopa were all widely recognized as the three original Tibetan masters of the Kagyupa tradition. And if you're not familiar with those names, I think we all are, but if you're not, it's worth looking into Marpa, Milarepa, and Gampopa. While they were all widely recognized as the three original Kagyupa masters, the rapid spread of Kagyupa monasteries, teachings, and adherents was essentially due to Gampopa's preeminence in Buddhist teachings and attainment. So Gampopa was the one who spread the teachings widely. You know, Marpa spread them to a few students and Milarepa spread them to a few main students. I mean, a lot of people studied with him, but not many lineage holders come out of that process. With Gampopa, it took off like wildfire, basically. And we'll learn more about that. So what I'm going to do here is just read a few passages from this book. highly selected to hit the highlights of Gampopa's life, but a lot of it's very beautiful. If you haven't read the book. this observation, also from Lobsang Olumpa, he says, Gampopa was widely regarded as belonging to the highest rank of lamas, reverentially called Kedrup Nidan, which means one who has achieved both scholarship and self-realization. The K is like the in Kempo, it means knowledge, and the Drup means accomplishment, which means meditative accomplishment. And Nidan means they have both. So he was both a scholar and a very realized meditator. By virtue of his diligence, moral strength, and intellectual sensitivity, he became a very accomplished scholar and a compassionate teacher. So now to Gampopa himself, to the life of Gampopa. Among all the disciples of Jetsun Milarepa, Lord of Yogis, the foremost was the supremely exalted Dharma Lord Gampopa. Many prophecies foretold Gampopa's appearance in Tibet, the land of snows. So we're going to fast forward now to the prophecies. So about Gampopa's previous lifetimes, Gampopa had been a bodhisattva in many previous lifetimes, prior to the time of Buddha Shakyamuni, the fourth Buddha, even before our Buddha. There are records of who Gampopa was because he distinguished himself. Even before the time of the third Buddha, Dipankara Buddha, he served and benefited many beings under the name of Lotus Guru. During the time of the third Buddha, the one before Shakyamuni, he incarnated as the Bodhisattva Beautiful Moonflower. During the time of Buddha Shakyamuni, Gampopa was his student, a Bodhisattva benefiting beings under the name of New Moonlight Healer. At one time when Shakyamuni Buddha was turning the wheel of the Dharma at Vulture's Peak near Rajagraha, and we have sutras that are from that turning of the wheel, New Moonlight Healer, aka Proto Gampopa, invited the Buddha along with the other bodhisattvas and disciples to his home. So the Buddha came to the home of New Moonlight Healer, who was going to be Gampopa in a future lifetime. When the Buddha and his entourage arrived, New Moonlight Healer supplicated the Blessed One to give a teaching. In response, Lord Buddha gave the teaching that became known as the Samadhi Raja Sutra. That's a very famous sutra. After revealing this teaching, the Buddha asked who of all his students present would come forward as volunteers to spread the teaching of this sutra. Well, guess who came forward? Among all the accomplished students and bodhisattvas, New Moonlight Healer stood up and promised to spread the sutra and to make its message available to future beings. And we see that a lot. You know, Medicine Buddha, for example, is said to have, you know, been just a being who made such strong aspirations to heal beings over many lifetimes that eventually he actually manifested as Medicine Buddha. So if we make aspirations like that, it could have a big result. You know, perhaps many lifetimes down the road. So now more details about Gampopa's beginnings. The Lord Gampopa took rebirth in the Suwa Valley of Nyal in central Tibet. All we need to remember about that is central Tibet, the middle of Tibet. Lama Norla Rinpoche was from eastern Tibet, Kham, and Gampopa was from the middle of the country. You know, Lhasa is also in central Tibet. During the year of the Earth Sheep, 1079, it talks a little bit about his father and his mother, and his father had two wives, I think it's the other way around is what's the most common in Tibet, but his father had two wives, and each gave birth to a son, and Gampopa was the eldest son. And his father gave him a really good education. He showed great interest in many subjects, and because of his enthusiasm, devotion, and openness, he was acknowledged as a great physician and scholar by the time he was 16, and had already received many tantric teachings of the Nyingmapo lineage from various teachers. At the age of 22, he married the noble sister of Dharma U, the powerful local king. So he marries a king's sister, and apparently she was a lovely person. Gampopa and his wife lived together in happiness. Over time, they had two children, a son and a daughter. And here is what propelled him to become a monk and give up his worldly existence. Several years after their marriage, an epidemic broke out in the region. As a physician, Gampopa worked day and night trying to heal the many victims of this terrible pestilence. Because remember, he's been like a recognized renowned doctor since he was 16. So that's, you know, almost 10, well, that's at least 10 years ago, because this is several years after he gets married at the age of 22. So despite his efforts, the plague claimed life after life. One evening, Gampopa returned home to find that his only young son had died of the epidemic disease. The next morning, Gampopa carried the child's body in his arms to the cemetery, and there said many prayers for the boy's fortunate rebirth. He walked home alone. When he arrived home, he found that his only daughter had also fallen sick with the same illness. Several days later, she too was dead. Once again, Gampopa walked to the charnel grounds, this time carrying his daughter's limp little body in his arms. There, as he had done for his son, he said many prayers for her fortunate rebirth. Once again, he walked home alone, a father no more. A few days later, his wife fell ill. Gampopa tried every kind of medical treatment he knew to cure her. He repeated prayer after prayer. He performed healing sacraments and ceremonies. He used every medical tool and herb he had ever learned. All these were in vain. Her sickness worsened and she suffered much pain. So I'm not going to read the rest of it, but just summarize that she just kept getting sicker. And he felt that she was ready to die, like her body was completely destroyed, but yet she clung to life. And so he felt that she must have an attachment, a really strong attachment to something. And he offered, like, if it was the house, he would do this. And if it was this, he would do that. And it turns out it was him that she was really attached to. So he said to her, so she's afraid to let go of life because she'll lose her husband. So Gampopa says to her, we met in this life due to our mutual vows in previous lifetimes, but because of your bad karma, you have caught this disease. I have tried everything to help, but have only prolonged your suffering. This has been a painful lesson for me. I have decided that no matter whether you live or die, I will devote the rest of my life to the Dharma. And he said, if you die, I will become a monk. Oh, he says, even if you were to recover from this disease, we cannot stay together forever. If you die, I will become a monk. Do you want me to swear it before you? Because again, he's working with her state of intense attachment to him. Will it help if I make an oath to become a monk and not take another wife after you die? And his wife answered, I know that you are a man who will never go back on your word, but to set my heart completely at rest, it would make me happy if you did take an oath before me. Gampopa then called in his uncle, Palsu, to bear witness. He placed a holy sutra written in golden words upon his head and took the oath to become a monk and devote his life to the Dharma. After seeing this, Gampopa's dear wife grasped her husband's hand and gazed into his eyes. Her heart now at ease, she sighed peacefully and breathed no more. So So he traveled. So he traveled and found a monastery called Ja Chakri, or Iron Wall Monastery. There he was accepted. And shortly thereafter, at the age of 26, he received full monastic ordination as a bhikshu under Lama Ja Chilwa, who was the abbot of the monastery. And he was given the name Sonam Rinchen. So that's how he gets the name Sonam Rinchen, meaning precious merit. Same Rinchen that's in the Jewel Ornament of Liberation title. Sonam Rinchen was a man whose wisdom and compassion were great, and whose clinging and desire were small, whose diligence and faith toward the Dharma were prodigious, and whose apathy and laziness were negligible. He studied the Dharma by day and meditated by night. He circumambulated stupas and other holy places and performed many other meritorious acts. So his life was completely Dharma. Due to his great compassion and purity, insects would not bite him. He could live without food comfortably for 5 or 6 days, and his body would always feel blissful. He could remain absorbed in samadhi, meditative state, for many days, and all gross forms of desire, aversion, and ignorance subsided in him. As prophesied in the Golden Light Sutra, all the signs preceding achievement of the 10th and final stage of a bodhisattva's enlightenment appeared unmistakably in his dreams. Thus did his understanding of both the theory and practice of the Buddha's teaching become fully ripened. Sometime later, Gampopa Sonam Rinchen had a strange vision. So he's in his monastery, he's living the Dharma life, he's meditating day and night, insects won't bite him. You know, what more is there to achieve? In this vision, there appeared before him a green yogi dressed in rags. And I have a note here that when Sita Rinpoche taught the life of Gampopa, which again, he spent like 3 whole weekends, you know, 6 sessions just on the life of Gampopa in much more detail than we're doing today. He said that he described this green yogi dressed all in rags as half naked, a half naked green yogi, all dressed in rags. Gampopa, you know, when he had this vision, Gampopa immediately felt his meditative concentration growing stronger and deeper. He experienced a penetrating understanding of reality. And Sita Rinpoche described that as profound insight, the profound insight of Laktong or Vipassana. He saw the nature of mind clearly. Filled with bliss, his mind became clearer and more alert than ever before. His entire being felt so light that it seemed he could almost fly. The apparition soon faded, but the lucidity remained. Later, he told some monks in the town about his vision and experience. So remember, he's a monk. He lives in a monastery. And all the other monks doing the monk program. So what do they think when he tells them about this green half-naked yogi dressed in rags who makes him be filled with peace and inspiration? The monks admonished Gampopa. They said to him, "You were ordained a monk. Until now, you have been observing the pure precepts flawlessly. If you start dreaming of yogis and such, you will run into trouble because that type of dream is conjured up by the demon Begar." So they think they're demonic dreams. Is everybody familiar with Milarepa because he's the green yogi? He's green because he didn't have any food. He ate nettles, which were green. Sometimes he's described as blue because Tibetans don't distinguish between green and blue the same way we do. Anyway, you get actually a lot of the flavor of Milarepa in this book too. So you kind of get 2 for the price of 1, a really good sense of who Milarepa was and a really good sense of who Gampopa was. So meanwhile, Gampopa is dreaming of Milarepa and being admonished by his fellow monks. Meanwhile, Milarepa was living in a cave called the Happy Sunlit Cave. And he had a vision that his successor, like the student to whom he would pass on everything and who would carry his teachings forward, that his successor would be a fully ordained monk. He's, you know, I mean, Milarepa is not a monk. This is not a monastic tradition. He's a yogi in the mountains. Like, why would his successor be a monk? He's not questioning it because he knows his vision is true, but he sees that his successor will be a fully ordained monk who is also a physician. Good description of Gampopa. I'm skipping a lot here. I mean, if you read the book, there's so much more detail in it and so many lovely Dharma songs too. So Well, there's Milarepa, still in his monastery, maybe feeling bad that he's having his visions. And Milarepa knows he's coming. So how does he get there? Well, the chapter in which that occurs is called The Three Beggars. One day, Venerable Gompopa went for a walk outside the grounds of his house. The sky was clear and blue, the sun was shining brightly, and after many days spent indoors meditating and studying the scriptures, he was glad to get a chance to invigorate his body in the crisp mountain air. He set out to circumambulate a holy stupa. Not far away from the monastery gate, he chanced upon three beggars sitting around a fire. A famine had afflicted the region that year, and Sita Rinpoche said here it was a time of drought at this time in history, and so there were a lot of beggars. Drought means no crops means nothing to eat. So he chanced upon three beggars sitting around a fire, and these three beggars were very hungry. As he had to pass nearby, Gompopa overheard the conversation of this ragged trio as they discussed their sorry lot. And so they had a whole conversation, which we don't have time to go into, but they end up by making wishes, like what would you wish? And one of them wishes that a cup of tsampa would fall just right down from the sky with lots of butter. And the third one, and then another one said, why wish for food? Like, go all the way, wish to be a king. And then the third one says, or wish to become a great yogi like Milarepa. And that's the first time Gompopa had ever heard of Milarepa. Milarepa is the king of yogis. He's a real ascetic living in those snow-covered mountains to the west, keeping alive on the food of meditation and the occasional nettle, wearing only a thin cotton robe. He doesn't need to sit around a fire like we do, that's for sure. So Milarepa doesn't need food. He doesn't need warmth. Like, these beggars are starving and they're very cold and they wish to be like Milarepa. Like, if only I could be a yogi like Milarepa, I'd be happy the way I am. So when Gompopa heard the name of Milarepa, the great faith that spontaneously arose in him was so powerful that he fainted. He's going to faint a few times in the course of this book. He fainted as if stricken and remained unconscious for half a day. When he finally revived, his heart became completely enraptured and tears of devotion burst forth from his eyes. The monk Sonam Rinchen then repeatedly threw himself to the ground and prostrated toward the snow-covered mountains in the west, the mountains where Milarepa lived in retreat. As he prostrated, he prayed fervently over and over, "Oh, Jetsun, Jetsun, please have mercy on me. Please take care of me." So somehow he recognizes that this is his guru, having just heard his name mentioned by a beggar. With a sense of, so there's more, like a few more things happen. And then with a sense of purpose and confidence unlike anything he had ever felt before, Sonam Rinchen arose from his seat. He'd gone back to his meditation, I guess, washed himself, put on fresh clothing, and went out in search of the beggars. So he's got to find the beggars to find Milarepa, right? So he finds the beggars and he invites them to breakfast. "You must be hungry from your long travels," he says. "I would be honored to have you join me for breakfast." Unable to believe their good fortune, all three beggars pondered for a moment whether this was really happening, whether they were still asleep and dreaming, or whether they had died of hunger during the night and gone to the pure land of Buddha Amitabha. So they went. Short story is that they went. And Gompopa talked to the oldest of the three beggars was the one who had mentioned Milarepa and who knew about Milarepa. So he said to that monk, "It seems that you know a great deal about Milarepa. I would be most grateful if you would guide me to his place. I have 16 ounces of gold and I will give you half so that you too may study the Dharma if you wish." So he's thinking also of benefiting the beggar, like not just using him to get there, but he'll give him half of everything that he has so that he can study the Dharma too. And the other half I must keep to provide for myself. So he's practical. He doesn't give it all away, but he just keeps what he needs. So let's see. So they go on their journey. I had to skip over a lot of things. They go on their journey and there are a lot of hardships. I'll just say there were a lot of hardships, and Milarepa almost starved to death. He almost died. He was lying almost dead in a ditch at one point, and he was still praying to Milarepa. Meanwhile, Jetsun Milarepa, in a very happy spirit, was teaching the Dharma at Joyful Fortune Peak. In the midst of his discourse, he would sometimes stop and remain silent for a while and then suddenly laugh heartily. And when asked, he explains that he can see Gunpowder coming and he can see Gunpowder lying half dead in a ditch. And so his students ask, when will he arrive here? Because he's talked up like this guy who's going to come and become his successor and spread the Dharma. When will he arrive here? Sometime between tomorrow and the day after. Will we have the good karma of seeing this man? Oh yes, said Milarepa. And whoever has the privilege of preparing his seat when he arrives will be nourished by the food of samadhi, meaning that they will have great attainment from their meditation. Whoever has the blessing of first seeing him will be guided to the blissful pure land of liberation. Well, there's an incentive to go out and be the one to bring Milarepa home. You will go straight to Dewa Chen. So Gunpowder finally arrives, and an old woman meets him. She says that she's going to bring her. She's going to have her daughter bring Gunpowder to meet Milarepa, because Milarepa has said that whoever brings him in will be vastly rewarded. And hearing this, Gunpowder thought to himself, it truly was the grace of the Guru that saved my life at Dingri, where he almost died. He knew of my coming all along. And in fact, it turned out that the three beggars were emanations of Milarepa. We skipped that part. Milarepa knew of my coming all along. Judging from his praise and predictions, I must be a worthy vessel indeed. Thinking thus, Gunpowder became a little proud of himself. As his self-conceit grew, he felt certain that he would have no difficulty now in receiving oral instructions. But as they entered the yogi's camp, they were greeted by Sebenrepa, one of Milarepa's close disciples. Sebenrepa was carrying a bundle of firewood, a bag of tea, and a cooking pot. He greeted them and said to Gunpowder, "Monk from U," and U means central Tibet. "Monk from central Tibet, monk from U, I am called Sebenrepa. Judson Milarepa has sent me with a message for you. He says to tell you that you have become full of yourself. You have developed pride. He will not grant you an audience today. Please come with me." Sebenrepa led a stunned Gunpowder to a rocky cave nearby. He handed Gunpowder the firewood, tea, and cooking pot and told him, "The Jetsun," meaning Milarepa, "wishes that you stay here alone until you have purified the stain of pride. He will not see you for at least half a month. Keep this wood and tea. I will bring you food." Sebenrepa then added, "The guru knew that you were coming, monk from U, and he intends to give you the oral instructions. So don't be disheartened. Stay here and supplicate him." Thus Gunpowder had to stay under the rocky roof of a cave for half a month, waiting to purify his prideful attitude. After a half month's time, he had lost all hope and all fear. He expected nothing. It was then that the elderly woman's daughter came again to his cave and said, "Judson Milarepa wishes to see you. Come, you will meet him now at Joyful Fortune Hill." So does anybody have any questions or comments? Okay, Andy, you are unmuted.
I read Songs of Milarepa, but also in the Reign of Wisdom, there's an account. And for me, yeah. There it says that they lead him to a ditch, not a cave. I just thought it was really, sort of typical of the flavor of the Kagyu lineage. Right down to Rinpoche, you get the same feeling. Also, it interests me that he's so attained. He's been a bodhisattva in previous lifetimes, yet he has to suffer so strenuously to get that final kick to make it. Everybody's going to die. He's going to lose them. So it sort of puts our sort of trivial sufferings in perspective.
Indeed. That's one of the inspirations of it, that he went through all of that in order to realize the nature of mind and become an accomplished practitioner and be able to benefit beings. Thank you. One of the things that John Paul Mackenzie Stewart says in the preface to the book is that He drew this account, like he put it together from a lot of different biographies, and they all varied in a lot of details. For example, the name of Milarepa's mother was given as completely different names in different books. So he went with whatever he found, in more than one or whatever seemed most plausible. But yeah, a ditch, I could see it. And it's nice to think it was a cave. Okay, anybody else have anything? All right, then we'll go on with the next chapter is called Meeting the Guru. Gampopa followed the young woman to the top of Joyful Fortune Hill. There at the summit, Gampopa saw his guru, Jetson Milarepa, for the first time. Milarepa was sitting on top of a huge boulder. We're going to read a long passage here because it's the meeting with Milarepa. He looked to be about 80 years old. So Milarepa is already a very old man. And in fact, how the whole thing came about with Milarepa was his student said, "Teacher, you're getting old. Like, what are we going to do when you die?" And he wasn't very happy to get that question. It said at first he seemed displeased. But then he started like looking, you know, to see what the signs were. And that's how he found out that Gampopa would be coming. So he looked to be about 80 years old. His long dark hair mixed with white fell loosely over his shoulders and down below his waist. He wore only a thin robe of white cotton, scarcely enough to keep a man warm in the brisk mountain air of Tibet. His skin was weathered from years of living outdoors, yet he seemed to radiate an aura of abundant energy and peace. His eyes shone with the inner light born from years of meditation. I'm going to read that sentence again. His eyes shone with the inner light born from years of meditation. Gampopa felt as if he had come into the presence of a lion or a king, something very regal, obviously. Full of reverence and sincerity, Gampopa prostrated before the guru and offered him all 16 ounces of gold as a mandal offering. Remember, he was going to give half to the beggar, but the beggar turned out to be an emanation of Milarepa and just vanished into thin air at one point. So he still has all his 16 ounces of gold, and he offered it to Milarepa along with a brick of fine tea. Milarepa looked straight ahead for a while without responding. Then with his eyes still fixed, he picked up a piece of gold from the mandala, tossed it into the sky and said, "I offer this to Marpa of Lodrak." So in his reverence for his teacher, he's offering some of the gold to his teacher. When he said this, celestial music filled the air and a heavenly light shone all around them, creating an indescribably magnificent atmosphere. And now, something interesting happens. This is a story that is told quite often. And we remember that Gampopa is a monk. Milarepa picked up a human skull cup filled with nectar, drank half of it, and handed the remainder to Gampopa, saying, "Drink it up." Now, nectar here is generally in the form of alcohol, usually beer, like what we get at empowerments from a skull cup. At this point, Gampopa noticed that he was not alone with Milarepa. In fact, they were surrounded by many of Milarepa's students who were yogis, not monks. Now, Gampopa had taken full ordination as a Kadampa monk and was supposed to abstain from alcohol. He thought to himself, "I am a monk, and there are many students watching. I cannot drink this." Thinking thus, he hesitated. "Don't think so much, just drink it," said Milarepa. Strong faith welled up in Gampopa's heart, washing away all doubts. "The guru knows," Gampopa thought, and drained the skull cup, leaving not one drop. This confirmed to Milarepa that Gampopa was indeed a worthy vessel for his ear-whispered teachings and that Gampopa would receive all of Milarepa's transmission without exception because he drank every drop of the liquid. That was a metaphor for receiving all of Milarepa's teachings, all of his transmission with nothing held back. It also meant that Gampopa would fully realize these teachings through practice and would become a lineage holder. Looking deeply into Gampopa's eyes, Milarepa said, "Our connection is very profound and deep. Although you have just arrived here, we have never been separate, my son." And he gave back the gold and tea, saying, Here, keep this gold, keep this tea as well. You need them yourself as provisions for your practice." And then he sang a long and beautiful Dharma song. And Milarepa used some of his tea offering that had been given back to him to make tea for Milarepa and some of the students, his close students. So the next chapter is called Initiations and Instructions. I'm not sure if I'm going to read any of this chapter. A little bit. Okay. So this is Milarepa talking to Gampopa. He says, "If you ask what is the true path It is when an authentic guru gives the student who is worthy, who is a worthy vessel, initiation and instruction. Primordial awareness exists pervasively in all sentient beings. Primordial awareness being the same as wisdom, like the innate wisdom that we have to realize in order to become fully awakened. So I have to plug my computer in. I forgot to have it plugged in earlier. Here we go. So primordial awareness, or Buddha nature, exists pervasively in all sentient beings. Although this ground is in all sentient beings, they fail to recognize it. That is our plight. Therefore, it is very important to follow a guru who holds a lineage, who can transmit this to you. Okay, that's all I'm reading of the initiations and instructions chapter. But then follows one of the most beautiful chapters in the whole book, and we can all take heed of this. These questions arise quite often, actually, and this is the answer. And I can tell you that the few times that I went to Lama Norla Rinpoche, you know, to ask about experiences, he said exactly the same thing. Not in detail, he just said the last line. But he always said the same thing. So when I encountered it in this book, I really felt I understood. So Gampopa spends a lot of time, he does a lot of intensive practice in a cave. He's received some basic instruction and empowerment from Milarepa, so he goes off to practice, which is what you do. He's meditating naked in a cave near the juncture of two valleys. And it's very cold, but he's not uncomfortable. On the morning of the seventh day of doing this intensive meditation in the cave, he had a vision of the Buddhas of the five families in the five directions. I mean, imagine if in the middle of your meditation, the five Buddhas suddenly appeared to you. That would be pretty amazing. It's never happened to me. The experience seemed profound, but when he reported it to Milarepa said, "This experience is like a man pressing his eyes and seeing two moons in front of him as a result. It is only due to your having captured and controlled the energy winds of five elements." So it is a little thumping, but he says, it is neither good nor bad. Keep meditating. And that's what Lama Norla Rinpoche always said to me in those same words. It's not good. It's not bad. Just keep practicing. and I took that to mean, oh, I'm an idiot. But apparently it's not what it meant. It was just an encouragement to keep practicing and not to make a big deal out of yourself and your whatever you perceive in meditation, don't make a big deal out of it. It's just an experience. And as you study meditation more, you learn more and more about what it means that these experiences arise, and they really just sort of stages on the path. And if you grasp onto them, try to replicate them or try to make something out of them, it's going to become a big obstacle to your practice. So he just gives them the encouragement, like, yeah, it means this, but don't even think about it. Just keep practicing. So I'm just going to read a couple of these where there's a whole series of experiences that he has. But it says about his reaction. Although Milarepa had told him that this experience was of no particular significance, it inspired Gampopa. Delighted and full of enthusiasm, he continued to practice intensely for another 3 months. And then he has a bunch more of them. And here's one, because this would be another really nice thing to happen, if it were ever to happen. One morning in his meditation, Gampopa had a vision that his cave was thronged with Chenrezis. Each one had a moon disc atop his head. So a whole cave full of Chenrezis, right there with him. He reported this to Milarepa, who said, "This is due to the increase of Bindu in the great bliss chakra at the crown of your head. It is neither good nor bad. Keep meditating." And then one evening at dusk, Gampopa saw the Vajra Black Line Hell. So if you've ever read the descriptions of the hell realms, you know, in Jewel Ornament, we will get to them, or in Patril Rinpoche's Words of My Perfect Teacher, any of those sources, they're very graphic descriptions of the hell realms. So one of his visions was not like a lovely vision, like seeing your cave filled with Chenrezis. One evening at dusk, Gampopa saw the Vajra Black Line Hell. Along with this vision, his heart area became congested and felt like it was seizing up. A strong wave of heart energy wind arose, stirring his entire body, and he became intensely depressed. Anybody who's done a lot of meditation knows that you can have emotional ups and downs when you meditate a lot. So he was having a down here. He had a couple of ups. Now he's having a down. He became intensely depressed. He asked the guru about it, who said, "You have tied your meditation belt too tightly. It's too short for you, and it's binding your channels, causing a constriction in your upward moving energy wind. It's neither good nor bad. Loosen your belt and keep meditating." Here's a good one. Gampopa returned to his meditation and practiced for another month. Then one day, due to the power of the yantra yoga movements, because he's also doing a physical yoga, his body began to shiver, tremble, and shake uncontrollably. He began crying. So these are things that can happen in meditation. You can get these kind of, and actually, I think I read something not that long ago. It might have been from Nyingi Rinpoche. It might have been from somebody else. Like people like talking about the different kinds of experiences you can have in your body and emotionally when you do a lot of meditation. So sometimes it can be physical shaking or trembling and crying. I used to get that one and I had no idea why. I would, as soon as it wasn't with like Shine meditation, but when I would do like a deity meditation, especially Tara, like tears would just roll down my face for no reason. And I would never remember that it might happen. Like it would always surprise me that that happened. I don't remember if I ever asked Rinpoche about it or not, but here's Gopopa in his cave and his body begins to shiver, tremble, and shake uncontrollably, and he begins crying. And he felt an involuntary desire to shout. He thought, "What is happening? Am I possessed by demons?" He went and informed his guru, who told him, "The bindu is increasing in the Dharma chakra at the heart center. Another just sign of practice on the path. No big deal." He thought, "It is neither good nor bad. Concentrate on your yoga exercises and do not stop them." Gompopa continued to meditate. Then one day, the whole valley of Guntang seemed to fill with smoke. By late afternoon, it was pitch black. He could not find the path. Like a blind man, he groped and crawled until he finally made his way to the guru's abode. Milarepa said, "It's nothing to worry about at all. Just relax, sit here and meditate." And Milarepa then taught him the method of clearing away obstructions and blockages in the upper part of the body. Gompopa did the practice and the darkness dissipated like the dawning of day. So it's a good thing for us to remember, whatever happens to us in meditation, it's neither good nor bad. Just keep meditating. So then Gompopa has a magnificent dream and we're going to skip that. We're going to read this little bit though. This is part of the instruction. So he goes to Milarepa with a magnificent dream, and Milarepa says, "Buddha himself said that dreams are deceptive and are not real. They are empty, vain, and hollow. To collect, record, and study them brings little gain." This is why Buddha used dreams as one of the eight metaphors to show the illusory nature of all things. So we're supposed to see life as a dream, meaning it's not really real. So if you take your dreams as real, that's another whole level of being stuck in illusion. He says, "Haven't these warnings entered your mind? Haven't these injunctions occurred to you?" So he first tells him, like, "Your dreams are meaningless. Why are you even coming to me?" But then he says, "And yet, in this case at least, your dreams truly were wondrous omens, foretelling marvelous things to come in future." So it was a good dream, and it foretold actually like everything that Gompopa would accomplish in his life as interpreted by Milarepa. But at the end, he says, "My son, this dream was very good, not bad. To prophesy by interpreting signs correctly is good and is allowed in the Dharma, but in general, it is harmful to become too attached to dream interpretation. No matter what experiences you have, whether in dreams or while awake, whether good or bad, if you cling to them as real, they become an obstacle. If you know that they are but an illusion, whether it's an actual dream or just your life, which is like a dream, if you know that they are but illusion, you can bring them to the path." Thus did Milarepa interpret the magnificent dream of 24 auspicious omens, foretelling of Gompopa's illustrious future accomplishments for the benefit of all beings. So we don't have a lot of time left, and we're actually most of the way through his life. Anybody have any questions or comments at this point? All right, we will continue. The next chapter is called Bardo Teachings, and I think, there's nothing in there that I felt we needed to look at. And then, in the chapter called Dreams, Songs, and Empowerment, he gets some possibly distressing news from Milarepa, which is, my son, although you would like to stay here with me because of the vows you have made in previous lives, you must now go back to central Tibet. So go and meditate there. You have my blessings. So it's time for Milarepa to go back home, basically. And why? Because for the sake of sentient beings, for the sake of benefiting all sentient beings, the time has come for you to begin to gather disciples and teach them. So he can't, same thing happened to Kala Rinpoche, right, Lama Jinzag? He was in his cave meditating for 12 years, and he planned to spend the rest of his life in his cave meditating. And the Karmapa sent messengers to him and said, you have to come out now. You have to teach. You have to benefit sentient beings. You can't just stay in your cave. So Gompopa got the same news from his teacher, Milarepa. Right, now for the sake of benefiting all sentient beings, the time has come for you to begin to gather disciples and teach them. Gompopa was not quite sure that he was ready and asked his teacher, when will I be certain that it is the right time to gather disciples? Milarepa replied, you can start to teach and spread the Dharma when you see the true nature of mind and stabilize that realization. It is true that you have already experienced some realization, but in time you will see your mind essence even more clearly. That will be quite a different experience from those you are having now. Then, when you're ready to teach, you will see me, your guru, as the perfect Buddha himself, and a deep and unshakable conviction will grow in you. Then you will be ready to teach. East of here, there is a place by the name of Gompo Dar, Gompo as in Gompopa. There you will see a huge mountain that resembles a king sitting on his throne. On the shoulder of the king-like mountain, Gompo Dar, you will find your disciples. Go there now and benefit them. And then Milarepa sang, and he sang him a lovely song. I'm going to read one verse of it. Oh, monk, are you going? This is the beginning. Oh, monk, are you going to central Tibet? My son, when you go to central Tibet, at times you may yearn for food. Whenever thoughts of food arise, enjoy the food of meditation. Realize that all delicious tastes are illusion. Experience whatever arises as the Dharmakaya. Sometimes you'll miss your guru. Whenever thoughts of the guru arise, pray to him as inseparable from you at your crown. Meditate on him at the center of your heart. Pray to him, never forgetting him. But recognize that even your guru is a dreamlike illusion. Yes, recognize everything as illusion. Milarepa then gave him all the empowerments, teachings, and blessings that the guru possessed. He also presented Gompopa with a fire starting kit and a tinder pouch, as well as a farewell gift, and said to his disciple, as a father speaks to his beloved son, now return to your homeland of central Tibet and meditate there. Next chapter, we're getting very close to the end, is called Final Instructions and Farewell. And some of you probably already know what the final instruction Milarepa gave was. He gave some other final instructions too before he gets to the zinger at the end. Gompopa packed up his few belongings and went to say goodbye to his fellow yogi disciples. Now fully prepared to depart for central Tibet, he went to say farewell to his guru. Milarepa met him along the path and said, I will see you off, my son. There are a few more teachings I wish to give you. And so they walked together for a while, father and son. The morning air was fresh and warm, and the sky was cloudless and clear. A gentle breeze, this is just setting the scene, a gentle breeze stirred the spring mountain flower blossoms as Milarepa and Gompopa walked along the eastern path. When they came to a stone bridge, Milarepa said, my dear monk from U, as a good omen, let us not cross the river together. Here now, put down your load and let us, father and son, talk for a while. And so they sat beside the river. Milarepa then took Gompopa's hand and said, my dear monk from U, and so he gave him a lot of advice, which I'm going to mostly skip, although it's really worth reading. He says, stay free of pride and self-centeredness. Cut the bonds of affection and attachment. Abandon all worldly desires for this life. Do not fall in with those in whom the three poisons of greed, hatred, and ignorance are strong. That's verse 6 of the 37 practices, lest they influence you with their poison. So we'll skip most of the advice. He says, in general, you should be full of mindfulness, like a tiny cautious sparrow or a wounded deer. Do not let yourself grow prideful over your discipline, lest you poison all the merit you have gained. Be kind to every being and in harmony with all. We could remember that piece of it. Be kind to every being and be in harmony with all. This is us receiving, you know, the teachings of our teacher. Gampopa receiving Milarepa's final teachings. Be peaceful, compassionate, patient, and live purely. You should bridle your wandering thoughts and avoid the temptation of distractions and idle chatter. You should dwell instead in quiet mountain retreats, seldom leaving your meditation seat. Spend your time furthering your three trainings. Although you may realize that all deeds are naturally pure, always practice even the smallest accumulation of merit and do not neglect purification. And although you may perfectly realize the emptiness of karma, its causes and results, avoid committing even the smallest negative action. And then he said, I have an unusually profound pith instruction, but it is too precious to just give it away. I am through now, son. You may go. Milarepa then embraced Gampopa and bid him farewell on his journey. Gampopa hoisted his pack and crossed the stone bridge, leaving Milarepa standing back on the other side of the river, not having given him the teaching. Gampopa knew that, I'm going to have to skip some of these things. So his guru calls him back, Milarepa calls him back before he's out of sight. And so he goes back across the bridge. And Milarepa says, who else but you deserves to receive this most precious quintessential instruction, even though it be of too great a value to be given away? Now come here and I will give it to you. Gampopa was overjoyed and asked, should I first offer you a mandala? No, it is not necessary for you to offer me a mandala. I only ask that you cherish this teaching and never waste it. He then led Gampopa behind a large nearby rock. Now look, Milarepa said, and hoisted the back of his robe, revealing the cheeks of his buttocks, all covered with lumps of hard callus like the hooves of an animal, due to having sat for so long on stony ground without a cushion. He said, there is no more profound teaching than this. Now you can imagine the hardships I have undergone. My attainment of great realization came from this, just from sitting all the time. It has simply been due to persistent effort, the fourth paramita, that I have accumulated merit and gained accomplishment. You need such effort, not any other doctrine. This is the essence of my teaching. With it, there can be no question about your liberation. This is the most profound teaching in Buddhism, said Milarepa. Practice. We could all take that to heart. And now the death of Milarepa, we're going to actually skip that. Milarepa told him to come back at a certain time, and Gampopa was deep in meditation. He went off and meditated for years after this before he actually taught other beings. He missed the day. And when he went back, it turned out that was the day that Milarepa had died. So he was very upset that he had missed seeing Milarepa one more time. And then he meditated for 14 more years of intensive practice. And Milarepa did tell him to do that, to meditate until he really realized the nature of mind. And so finally Gampopa came to realize the true nature of mind and the full meaning of his guru's words. He saw that all of samsara and nirvana, like he really saw this directly now. He's had, like, this is how many years of intense meditation it took him. This is like 14 years on top of all of his time with Milarepa and all of his time in the monastery. He saw that all of samsara and nirvana are but dreams and illusions. Thus he attained the wisdom free from elaboration. So this is how he came to teach. After his illumination, Gampopa meditated for 7 more years. Now we're up to 21 years since he left Milarepa. But many people began to gather around him and presented heaps of offerings to him. Gampopa needed little and distributed the offerings among his neighbors, the people of this place. One day as he was meditating at dawn, he heard a voice in the sky saying, neglecting to benefit beings is the downfall of the bodhisattva. So I guess it's time. Taking these words to heart, Gampopa thought, I should leave this solitude immediately and begin to share the Dharma with others. And yet, as the chapter goes on, he keeps meditating. And he's built himself a new retreat house, and he's going to go in and do more retreat. Deeply inspired, he decided to build a retreat house at, this is when he gets to Gampo Dar. He hasn't actually gotten to the place yet where Milarepa told him he would spread the Dharma. Arriving there, he was awestruck by its natural splendor. It was the most spectacularly beautiful countryside he had ever seen. So he's building himself a retreat house. And as he was preparing to enter the retreat, two learned Buddhist monks came to seek audience with him. He was obliged to meet with them since they asked and to give them teachings, even though it delayed his retreat. Soon after that, 60 more disciples gathered around him and he taught them and again planned to enter into retreat. But then people kept streaming in from all directions. And before long, as prophesied by Milarepa and Shakyamuni Buddha, no fewer than 51,600 disciples gathered in the Rocky Mountains of Dakla Gampo to study at the feet of the Dharma Lord Gampopa. So then he had to teach. Never before in the history of Tibet had so many Dharma students assembled at one time. So this is how he became, this became how the Kagyu lineage flourished and spread, was through Gampopa attracting so many disciples. We're going to have to skip the rest of it. So it tells the story, the three yogis of Kham, of how he met the Karmapa, who became the first Karmapa, was one of his students. And that's how the Kagyu lineage continued, that he actually had three main disciples, one of whom was Pamo Drupa, who was also very famous. He established not only his own lineage, the Padru lineage, but that became eight sub-lineages. So when we talk about the four major and the eight minor, Gampopa established the Kagyu lineage in his monastery. And then he had these three main disciples who went off and established their own branches. Pamo Drupa established most of them, but the man who became known as Dusum Chempa and became the first Karmapa established the Karma Kagyu lineage, which is our lineage. And that it actually, according to this book, became the strongest of the Kagyu lineages to survive. So from Gampopa came all of it. And then the lineage flourished through the Karmapa lineage. There's so much more that we could read in this book. And then he died in 1159. He died in 1159, and there were many wonderful signs. We were going to talk about lineage a bit more. There's a wonderful epilogue here that talks about how all the lineages of the Kagyu lineage came into being. And we don't really need to remember those details, but it is interesting to read. And then there's a very nice sort of appendix, the history of the Kagyupa order, by Lobsang Lalungpa. There's probably one thing here that I wanted to read you about lineage. I think it's in this. Okay, so all of these traditions, all of these branches of the Kagyu lineage are still alive today, passed on from guru to disciple in an unbroken lineage from the Buddha Vajradhara to the present, a transmission not merely of intellectual understanding, but of true meditative realization. Each of these teachers received the oral teachings from their teacher, practiced what they were taught, attained realization, and then out of the greatest kindness and compassion, continued to work for the benefit of all beings. Only by their indefatigable efforts have the teachings come down to us today. And so I just wanted to end with a quotation that I just ran across on Facebook from Trungpa Rinpoche about the importance of lineage. We were going to talk about that more, but I decided we would just talk about Gampopa. He says, sometime, and this is from his book, The Mishap Lineage, which is about how crazy the early teachers of the Kagyu lineage were, how crazy and wild. But he says, sometimes a person would like to exert his or her power in practicing spirituality in order to develop further grandiosity, glorifying his or her own existence. That is quite transparent in that in this situation, people are not actually in keeping with the lineage heritage. So he's talking about people who break off from the lineage and think that their own thing is going to be better and they're kind of interested in making a name for themselves. And that can happen. He said they would like to step out of the lineage and create their own little satellite, which is known as an unguided missile. So it would seem that his advice is not to follow those people. I mean, lineage is a very precious and important thing. We know that the teachings have been kept pure by the lineage holders, and we don't know what anyone is doing when they decide to create their own thing. So we're very fortunate to have this lineage that's come down to us from Marpa, Milarepa, and Gampopa, spread through the monastic system created by Gampopa. It's intact today. Our teacher, the guide of our monastery is Situ Rinpoche, who was a heart son of the 16th Karmapa, and we now have the 17th Karmapa as well. So we're very lucky to have these teachings, and now we know a little bit about how they came to be handed down. So does anybody have anything to say or to ask before we do our dedication of merit? Yes, Deidre, I'm going to unmute you. You're unmuted.
So that's why they always put the Gampopa hat on, the lamas, when they're giving empowerments.
I don't know the answer to that. Is it a Gampopa hat that they put on?
It's what it looks like to me when you look at the cover of the hat. It looks like... Yeah, it looks, well, not that one. There's another one.
But it's red, right? But it's a red hat.
So anyway, I was just wondering, I always kind of wondered if that was Gampopa, like, are they kind of go back to the source?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Sorry.
No problem.
Okay, anybody else have any unanswerable question? Or any comment, Lama Jinzong? Yes, I'm going to unmute you. I was hoping you'd have something to say.
Well, it's just that this whole thing of how he wants to go off and all of a sudden he has, 60,000 disciples all come to him. And I just remember Lama Norla Rinpoche always saying that, if you have ambition and you want something to happen, if you don't have the karma for it, no matter how much you want it, it won't come. And then if you have the quality, then, through meditation and years, whatever, then without wanting it, and especially even if you don't want it, it can't help but arise because right. The karma's ripening, so that it manifests in that way such that whether he wanted it or not, that's what occurs because he became, when they talk about that magnetizing quality. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yes, I was really struck by that as well, how little Gampopa sought to be a famous teacher. He really just wanted to continue to develop his realization, but Milarepa prophesied that he was meant to spread the teachings widely, and so it had to happen that way because Milarepa was looking at what had to happen karmically. Anybody else have anything before we do the prayers? Okay, yes, Patrick, I'm going to unmute you.
Well, speaking of karma, I was struck by what they said about his wife when she was on her deathbed, that she had the bad karma to die from that disease. But it seems like it would be good karma to me for her to leave the stage right on time,
Well, I guess it turned out to be good karma for all of us, but it probably didn't feel like good karma to his wife or to him at that time. Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Patrick. Anybody else have an observation or a question? All right. Well, we're a couple of minutes past 2:30, so we will go ahead and do our dedication. And I'll just say that next week we'll be back on track. Like these first three classes we've been winging it a bit because it's always at the beginning we're pulling together from a lot of sources, but we're going to be in the book starting next week. So we'll get back to our familiar routine. And so next week we'll be looking at the introduction. So everybody, I will send an email, but I ask everybody to do the readings for the class. And for this reading, I think you need, I think it's the same in Ringu Tulku, but it's called the introduction in Ornament of Precious Liberation or Jewel Ornament. It's the first thing that describes samsara and nirvana. It's very short. And in Ringu Tulku, it is called the introduction. So that's what I want you to read. If you have the Ringu Tulku book, read it in there. It's from page, well, I'll send it out. It's pages 1 through 6. And same thing, if you have the jewel ornament, if you have both of them, read both. And we will go over that next week. It's really, really crucial introduction to the book, like why we need the path. You know, why we are where we are and why we need the path and what the benefit of that will be. So I'll send an email with that information. And hopefully I will get the website updated this week. So now dedicating the merit of all of this activity to the enlightenment of all beings. Oh, yeah. This merit, may it win omniscience, defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddhakayas, the blessings of changeless dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast sangha, this dedication please fulfill. And letting our minds come to rest in open awareness or following the breath, whatever's more comfortable, just for a moment. So that was a lot of material. And I would recommend also this week, because the reading is very short this week, especially if you haven't looked at a biography of Gampopa yet, reread or reread whatever biography of Gampopa you have, and really let sort of the highlights of his life sink in, because it is very inspiring. And in particular, I leave you with Milarepa's final instruction. Don't ever forget that. Practice, practice, practice. All right. We see that Gampopa did that. He really took that to heart. All right. I'm unmuting everybody in case anybody has anything to say.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye, everybody.